Welcome to another episode of Kicking Back with Gilden McAdam. What a guest we've got for you tonight, my old sparring partner. But I'll tell you what a champion and what a legend he was. Over 300 games at the magnificent Collingwood Football Club. Also become a coach, over 88, over 400 contribution to VFL, AFL football. I'm really glad to say I've got Tony Shaw in the building. Tony, good to see you, brother.
Gil, great to be here, mate. Thank you.
Yeah, nah, look, thanks for coming on my show. And what are you up to today? I know you're doing a bit of commentary. What are you up to?
Yeah, I'm still, 3AW. I call a couple of games a week. Work with Jimmy Bartel and Matty Lloyd and Matthew Richardson. So it keeps me pretty young. Yeah, I love it.
Can you get a word in there?
Yeah, they probably can't get one with me going, mate, but that's all right, yeah. So, I work there and I've got a couple of other things on the side. I've got 6 grandkids and another one on the way, so 5 boys and a girl at the moment. So we've got our basketball side, mate.
Gee, they'll keep you busy.
Yeah, no, they're good. They all play team sport. They all play footy and basketball, so, we keep them moving.
Hey, you've been in the system for a long, long time, over 40 years, probably nearly 50 years. Yeah. What do you like about football today? Has it changed? Because there's certain things I like and I don't like.
Yeah, probably more I don't like. But look, I think I was lucky and we were lucky. We played in an era which was not as businesslike.
Yes.
It was probably the purest sort of start of the footy. All the great things that made footy were great in our time, and I'm talking about high marks, a lot of high marking, high scores, intelligent kicking, and the physical contact, although at times it was brutal and we had to clean that up, there's no doubt, and they've done a good job with that. Mm. All those things seem to disappear over a period of time a bit later because coaches sort of went defensive, mate. But what do I like? I like the strategy of the game. Because I like basketball as a kid, I just see how things are done, and people say, oh, you're a dinosaur, do you understand what it is? Well, I understand. Is it good to watch at times? Probably not because of the over-the-top defensive work, you know, and congestion a bit.
Well, there's a lot of defence and there's a lot of flooding.
Yeah.
So back in our day, we had room and we could make space. It's very hard to make space in footy today, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is because, you know, they just don't want to allow a great full forward. Like in our era, like the great full forwards, we had 4 or 5 or 6 of them who kick 100 goals every year. And
10 every week, Tony Lockett.
Oh, Tony Lockett and Jason Dunstall. And in my time, well, Peter McKenna, I went down to Victoria Park.
BT kicked 100.
Well, BT kicked 100, yeah, so... it's a different era, but I still see the positive of it. The good sides normally play, and I think it's churning a bit now, they're wanting to score the good sides. Yeah. And I like watching them. What happens halfway during the year, some of the bad sides can't make finals, so what they do, they don't want to get beaten by big margins, so they get behind the ball, make it hard to score, and they're the games you probably don't want to see as much, mate. But it's always got its interest.
I want to ask you about the fight for MND with the great Neil Danaher. And, mate, you were lucky enough to get a gig on one of those. And can you share?
You haven't done it yet?
No, I haven't done it. But
you'll get one. I'll push you up.
Can you share what it meant to you to be able to? Because you would have played against the great Neil Danaher back in the time.
Yeah, played against Neil. He was a superstar, mate. What happened was cruel with the injuries that he had. And then to go into coaching, just a great family because I've always got on well with Anthony. Chris, I didn't see as much. Terry, we had some great times, you know, playing state and other things. So, look, what this man's achieved, Gil, under that, you know, under those sort of the ailment that he's had, is unbelievable. And to be part of it, I went down as Beetlejuice because he's got a bit of character, Beetlejuice, and I love the movie. Matter of fact, there's a Beetlejuice 2 coming out, you know.
I've seen it.
You haven't seen Beetlejuice?
No, I haven't.
Oh, mate, you've got to get. Anyway, I went there. And just to do it, it was just fantastic to be involved. I did another function last week at Diamond Valley, matter of fact, in the Diamond Valley or Northern Footy League now. Diamond Creek Footy Club did an MND night too. So they got the old players out and playing, and I did a bit of auctioneering for them. But you just got to jump in on such a great cause, and hopefully we can find it. You know, unfortunately, it'll probably be after Neil's gone.
Yeah, what a player he was, and he could have played over 300. I reckon I was mentioning him before. He could have won a couple of Brownlows. That's how good he was.
Yeah, he was like I saw Bruce Doole and Neil very similar, how smooth they were and read the play and kicked the ball beautiful, you know. And you're talking about Brucey Doole, one of the greatest of all time. So, yeah, great comparison. But I just a lovely man and a great family.
Let's scale it back. Yeah. Reservoir, back in the day, Collingwood, there was a zone. You was in the Reservoir zone, whereas in my case, we got drafted.
Yeah.
Tell us about when you got picked up.
Well, my mum and dad were born and sort of lived in Brunswick. They moved out to Reservoir. Mm. Reservoir was a Collingwood zone. Across the railway line was Fitzroy. Matter of fact, there's a Ruthen station which was named after Alan Ruthen, who played for Fitzroy, and we used to walk over those parts of the train line all the time. But yeah, if you were a couple of blocks certain way, you were different. Thomastown, which was the next suburb up, was Carlton. That's how the zoning was. And you know, I think Gippsland Way was Hawthorn. It was really interesting. My mum and dad, you won't believe, my mum barracked for Hawthorn. I don't know how that happened. Dad barracked for North Melbourne, being from Brunswick, so it's pretty close. But all the kids, the six kids of the Shaw family, all barracked for Collingwood. Yeah, it just happened just that happened way. It's incredible. Way. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But a great upbringing. We had a fantastic upbringing.
Yeah. Hey, look, when you got drafted, you know, you must have been proud. Your big brother Ray was at the club at the time. You know, how much of an influence that Ray would have done on you? Because I'm sure he would have encouraged you to play at that level.
Yeah, I saw Ray win the Liston Trophy, which was the VFA Best and Fairest, a couple of years before he went to Collingwood.
Okay.
And all the media came into our little housing commission house in Reservoir.
Oh, wow.
And I was a 12, 13-year-old kid sitting in a corner, and all these lights were on exactly like we are here. And I'm thinking, gee whiz, I want to get a bit of this, you know, if I can, if I've got the ability to do it. So that was in the back of my memory.
Yeah.
But I went down to Collingwood under 19, so it was a pretty aggressive thing. I walked out, matter of fact, with one of the best junior footballers ever played footy with.
Wow.
And just because we weren't getting a go in these practice games, quarters, and I walked out, and sometimes you get a kick in the backside. Whether I was going to be picked or not, I don't know, by Collingwood under 19s. But I went back to Reservoir Lakeside in the Diamond Valley League, which was tough, and I played against men. And I reckon that year of playing against men, instead of playing against those under 19 kids, which who would have been 16, 17, really accelerated.
That toughened you up a bit.
Oh, well, it toughed me up, all right. I knew what was coming from me because I got knocked out a couple of times because I was a young bloke going all right, you know, and these tough blokes were. But look, I don't have any recriminations against that. It was it was a big year. It probably taught me how to have a couple of frothies too on the side as a young kid when maybe underage, but that's all right. And we had it was just to be involved in a grand final and a premiership. I think it was Reservoir Lakeside's last premiership before they amalgamated with another club, which is sad in itself.
Tommy was coaching Collingwood at the time.
Yeah, Tommy and Ron Richards.
Tom Hafey.
Yeah, Ron Richards was the one. I left and I played in that premiership at Reservoir Lakeside, they asked me back because they had a lot of injuries in the reserves. And
okay. How you got back?
Yeah, Ray said to Ronnie Richards, oh, my brother can play a bit. And they asked me down and I played the reserves and Ronnie, I think, liked what he saw and he was fantastic to me, Ronnie Richards. I played 12 reserves games in the next year after being told, you know, walking out. Right. And then played in, I think, four or five senior games and one final against Hawthorn at the MCG. So 12 months after walking out, that's what happened. But probably lucky that Ray was there. And then Tommy, I love training. I just love training. I wasn't quick, as you know. I couldn't catch you, but I try and do it another way if I could. But, yeah, my stamina was really good. So I used to love running. I ran everywhere. My mum and dad never drove. They never had a car in the whole time of my lifetime at home.
Well, that's,
and they never drove, ever.
Well,
so
that's one thing I remember you as a player. You saying you wasn't quick, but I'll tell you what, you'd be down that back pocket end. Next minute you'd be up that forward pocket end. Nice to think, gee, this bloke's got an engine.
Yeah, well, that was it. I had a bit of stamina. I used to run past Terry Wallace in Eltham and run on the hills of Eltham, you know, getting an advantage, I thought, against everybody. I knew every time I played against Terry Wallace, he's doing the same thing as I am. So we
went ahead. You're a plower.
Exactly. You've got it right too, mate. We're both plows.
Jack Cole, the great Jack Cole, played against when he was coaching in Adelaide. He come and spent a bit of time at Collingwood, only a few years. How was Jack?
I love Jack. Well, Tommy got the flick. That was player run in some ways, but I wasn't involved in that, thank God, because I wouldn't have done it.
Yep,
Tommy coaches the six grand finals in a row. We couldn't win one. It was pretty hard to then But anyway, the players, some of the senior players didn't like the way they trained. So Jack came across 84. I was only there for a couple of years, but he put me in a tagging role, like playing against the best midfield and try and stop them but get the ball yourself. And yeah. And it suited my game. And
best thing they ever did.
Yeah, I won my first Copeland Trophy in 84 under Jack. And I was sad to see him go, but lovely bloke. We keep getting together and, try and keep in contact whenever we can. But every time we see each other, it's fantastic.
Yeah, no, he's a legend in the sample, yeah, obviously, yeah, you yeah. know. 1960
yep.
to 1989, Collingwood loses 8 grand finals. Now, look, we all know the history of the Collie Wobbles and that sort of stuff, but 8 grand finals, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Well, look, the pressure on the players and the supporters getting in your ear. Yeah. How did you cope with that? And how did the whole Collingwood cope with that?
Yeah, it was hard. It was hard. I played in two of those, 1980 and 81. After, that was what, my first 3 or 4 years of football. So to have to wait another 9 years till 1990 to get the opportunity was hard enough. But look, I play with some great people in that era. We never got it done. Mm. Were we good enough? Probably not. We lost one by under a goal, so you just think that could have happened against Carlton. I didn't believe in the Collie Wobbles. I didn't believe that. I just think we weren't good enough. Tommy got everything out of each group, to get it done. Bobby Rose coached some of the greatest players of all time in Collingwood, never got it done. 1970, I was there as a 10-year-old. I cried that day, We're 44 points up and we get beaten. At halftime, we get beaten by 10 points. So, I still look back at it and... The Collie Wobbles, to me, were just made up. I think Louis Richards made it up, matter of fact, just to make headlines. But I didn't believe in it. I just believe we had to get certain blokes in. And 1990, we probably weren't the best talented side, but tell you what, we were tough.
Yes,
and then we got it done.
Well, you talk about 1990, because 86, the great Lee Matthews, Collingwood signing him up. All of a sudden, 1990, you're playing in a premiership. You've done some recruiting. Tony Francis, Scott Russell, Craig Kelly come over from South Australia. Craig Starcevich from WA. Michael Christian. So you had a few interstaters.
Yeah.
And you win the flag.
Yeah, and you picked it really well there. It wasn't just them. We also, a couple of years earlier, we won the under-19s premiership, right? Collingwood won the under-19 premiership. There was Monkhorst, Kosciuszko, McGuan, Brown. So they all came through just that period. And then Lee comes in. And Lee, let me tell you...
perfect timing.
Oh, yeah, perfect timing. Well, he knew what was needed. But he wasn't... How can I say, tactically, it wasn't over the top that you didn't understand. He didn't want to... He simplified the game. And we had rules. And one thing, put your head over the ball.
Yeah.
If you don't put your head over the ball, I'm the Lee Matthews, mate. He look at you with those beady eyes and...
put your body on the line if you don't get hit off the ground.
Yeah, exactly. And it just all came together, we still think of Peter Sumich having a kick for goal to win the game in that
against
final.
Against West Coast, yes.
And he misses that left footer. On that side, I reckon he'd miss a lot. But anyway, people said we were lucky. And then we won the next three games by 8, 10 and 8 goals. It was pretty dominant over the next, because Lee trained us brilliantly. Our pressure went through the roof and the other sides couldn't cope, thank God. And you get that other feeling, Gil, which... I probably wouldn't be sitting here now if it didn't happen.
In 1990 grand final, I actually went to it.
Okay.
And that was my first grand final ever. I've ever been to, because I never grew up.
Yeah.
Now, I just remember going and watching and I'm looking and I'm thinking how big this stadium is and then all of a sudden the big brawl starts.
Yeah.
And Terry Danner, and then you got Gavin Brown and then Derek Kickett's in there and Longy's in there.
I think 11 blokes got reported.
Did 11 get reported?
I think 11 got reported. Some got off. I got off, thankfully, but I didn't do much. Terry Danner got 11 weeks.
Did he get 11?
Because he knocked out Gavin Brown and then he hit Craig Starcevich, sort of in play, but I think he meant it. But look, I thought it was a bit harsh for TD. 11 weeks is a lot in those days. But he got 11 weeks for the both of them, yeah. But look, the fight helped us because I remember Lee Matthews getting us together and in the we had James Manson and the monkey wanted to kill everybody in the stadium. And he got us really tight and he said, look. He just said, look, the umpies will take control, put your head over the ball as hard as you can for the next 5 or 7 minutes. And we were late. I think we got two 50-metre penalties. I think Essendon didn't focus enough on the ball, And we kicked 7 goals to 1, I think, in the quarter. Now, still at half time with six goals up and we're still thinking, you know, I had been there. So, but no, it was a great time for all our Collingwood people and to see the joy on, you know, I had been there for, what was that, 11 years by that stage. And to see the joy on all those people who've gone through the hard times, the boot starters, the blokes on the dorm, and you know, those people.
They're the heart and soul of the club. Some of them are crying, you know.
It was amazing.
Was that your most proudest moment? Tony Shaw, the captain, putting up the Premiership trophy, the Norm Smith medal.
Yeah.
That's got to be your greatest achievement. From a personal point of view, surely the prize.
I didn't worry about the grand. As a matter of fact, who told me I'd won the Norm Smith medal, and I said, he said, oh, you won the medal, and I thought, oh, the grand final medal. Of course I won it. You know, I just wanted to get that grand final.
Yeah.
And then he goes, no, you won the Norm. I thought, oh, well, that'll be nice. I can give that to my grandkids down the track, mate. But look, to just perform on the day. It was just a relief that we weren't losers again.
Yeah,
you know, after the game, the excitement comes days after and hours after. But on that siren, I remember I went down on all fours and people said we were crying. I wasn't crying. I just think, thank God it's over.
It's over.
And we're winners, you know. We're winners. We're not losers again.
Yeah.
And 32 years was a long bloody time, mate.
Bloody it is, 32 years. Yeah. Well, the great Malcolm Blight always says, they're hard to win grand finals.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they're hard
you
to
know,
win.
You know, clubs take years to win them. It's hard.
Yeah, well, look, you have a look at the Western Bulldogs. Sydney, you know, took...
St Kilda, we've only won one.
In 1960, and it was against us, so don't talk about that, mate.
Well, that's all we can talk about, unfortunately. Yeah. Hey, after that, though, you weren't finished. To me, you're always going to become a coach. Just from my experience with Tony Shaw, your leadership and the way you spoke on TV and as a captain, I always thought, this bloke, he'll coach one day. You ended up becoming a coach, but before you become the coach at Collingwood, you got offered to go to Carlton under David Parkin.
Yeah.
I'm going to call you Mickey McGuan. You left Collingwood, you went to Carlton.
Well, I sacked Mick to... It sent him to Carlton. So, because Mick, I thought Mick's groins were gone then. So I thought we're not going to lose a lot. And we didn't in the end. But I had the job at Carlton on the park. In hindsight, I should have gone. I should have done it.
Yeah.
No doubt. I had the job. And then I had a couple of meetings with John Elliott and I thought, gee, I don't know if I'm going to be able to work with this bloke a bit, you know. Parco, no worries. Goffey, no worries. But in the end, coming from one of those meetings, Alan McAllister rang me and said, look, Lee probably might be his last year. How about you stay with us? And it looks like we'd like you probably to go on. So I was development coach under Lee for 12 months and then took over once Lee called it. But in hindsight, I should have gone to Carlton. The funniest thing was that Carlton in that year won the senior best grand final.
Yes.
But the reserves, who when I knocked the job back, Kenny Judge got the job. And Kenny Ripper bloke. But Kenny got the job and they finished Wooden Spooner. So I might have had a hard year as a coach in me first with Carlton, but we would have won the premiership as a senior, so I would have been part of that. Just a different culture. Didn't work for me. I had my time. You know, I had 4 years, no recriminations. You move on, and I think we did it pretty well with Eddie coming in, and I knew Mick Malthouse was going to come in. So we blooded a few younger blokes in the last 8-10 games. I said I'd see the year out, which I think you should.
Mm-hmm.
And we blooded some young kids who went on to play a lot of footy.
I remember you looked after a young Indigenous young man, Robbie R. Matt, who at that time, he come straight from Darwen. He went straight to school.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is back...
Hard.
That was hard back then, you know? And you coached him. Like, can you share some moments about Robbie with you?
Yeah, Robbie was... Robbie got homesick a lot.
Mm.
I used to ring his old man Doodles up and say, mate, he wants to go. And Doodles say, no, you just keep him there. I want him to stay there. I don't want him coming home. And probably because of the distraction.
Yeah.
Super player.
Fast.
Yeah, fast and talented. But, you know, I don't know. We didn't have success, so that can wear you down too, not just being in Melbourne from a long way from home.
Yeah.
But talented, you know. And then I recruited your brother, Adrian. Now, he was the only reason I did that because he kicked 8 goals at Victoria Park. Remember that day? He kicked it on Mickey Gafer.
Now,
Mickey Gafer's the hardest bloke you'll ever want to play on. And Adrian,
I call him the glove.
The glove, yeah. And Adrian killed him. So I said, I've got to get this kid. So I got him in, and next minute he got homesick, so it was hard. But again, I say, look, I had my time. Would I do anything different? I probably I didn't see the defensive, because I played as a defensive midfielder, but I like to be offensive and coach and score. So I was a different sort of coach than what I was player. I didn't see the defensive part of the game coming into the game. So that was one problem. And I had a lot of players who I played with at Collingwood who I then coached. And that was an issue. Mm-hmm. I had faith in them, but I didn't put enough time into them. You know, okay. Two gamers, one gamers to 300 gamers, mate, they all need time.
Yeah,
and I sort of left them to their own devices where I should have helped them more because I trusted them. Yeah. But that was my wrongdoing.
But,
so,
but that was the go back then too with a lot of coaching back in them days.
Yeah, you do. Because a lot of players who just finished the game got jobs within one or two years.
Well, you didn't have your 5-6 assistants. You didn't have all the stat sheets to go here and you go there and you got that many different things.
Oh, mate, I can't.
It was actually a bit more simple back then.
Well, you know, even in the modern game, I think, how do they not stop run-ons now? Like in our day, we'd start a fight.
You'd just
start a commotion so the umpies would stop the play. But now they... sides kick 6 or 7 goals and you're thinking, how can that happen? You know, how can that happen? And the coaches, well, you've got 8 of them, can't stop it. You know, it's incredible. But, yeah, look, I had Danny Frawley, our good mate Danny Frawley, come across.
I was going to say, one of my best mates, Spud, Danny Frawley, went over there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love that man. And what was it like working with him? Because he was a champion.
Ah, he's a funny man. And look, I got him because he was, you can remember him and Gary Lyon used to run the development for the AFL.
Yes.
Yeah, they used to do the clinics and all that.
I worked with them.
Yeah.
And you knew who else worked with them?
What were you getting a clinic, $20 or $20?
No. I was actually employed by the AFL. So there was Gary Lyon, Danny Frawley, Gavin Brown was there.
Yeah, Brownie,
And Gil McAdam, there was 4 of us.
Yeah, I got him across because I thought, I've seen that development stuff that he did, and I thought he'd be great with our young kids, and he was sensational. So he was sort of the seconds coach, development coach. Mm. I had Stan Magro, who was tough. I brought over Neil Baum. Neil Baum came to Collingwood as my footy manager.
You got and him then straight went to out of Norwood, straight out of Norwood.
Yeah, he was Melbourne, wasn't he? Then he finished, and then he went to Geelong, and then he went to Richmond, and have a look at the success Baum he's had, but look, great people. We see each other now. We think we laugh about how hard it was at times. You know.
Yeah. Hey, one thing me and you got in common.
Yep.
Three brothers, three Shaws, three McAdams, all played AFL.
Yeah.
Like one thing, my mum and dad were so proud. I'm sure your mum and dad was very proud of your family, what you achieved.
My dad played. He won a Herald Trophy, which was in the VFA in the 1940s, like the Liston Trophy, the best and fairest.
Yes.
So
yes.
He could play a bit, but you know, in that era, blokes gave footy up at 27 because they had to work 2 jobs or
you couldn't do it.
No, my dad was in the pub game, but he was a good player. I had uncles who were from my mum's side who were good players. One played at Carlton a long way back. It was fantastic. Neville played 47. Ray played 150.
I actually played against Neville when he was at West Adelaide before I came to the AFL.
Yeah.
And Neville used to give it to me. And then when I got to Melbourne, Tony Shaw used to give it to me. So, but me and Nev go back a long way.
I heard you caught up with him not long ago. Yeah. So that was all. Yeah, so he played 47. He was very talented. I thought he probably didn't train hard enough. It was a bit more that he enjoyed what came with it instead of doing it. But, look, that's what happened. My other brother, Calvin, who's not with us anymore, he played under-19s reserve, never played a senior game, and he passed away in 91, which is probably, the saddest part of my life in a lot of ways because he committed suicide. So, but anyway, that's going. But he played down there too but never made the top level. And then
what about your two nephews, Heath and young Rhys?
Rhys, yeah.
What two little superstars them two
and
were.
And good
people. And good kids.
Yeah, well, you know, Rhys goes to Collingwood. I think he wasn't looked after one of the grand final losses. Mm. And I'm trying to think of the kid now, Cole, who played in the same game. And they blame those two.
Richie was an Alice, he's an Alice Springs boy, Richard Coles.
Yeah, well, they blame those two, nearly blame those kids for losing that grand final. A couple of things that made it mightn't have gone hard enough.
Richie ended up going to Essendon.
Yeah.
And Rhys went to Sydney.
Yeah, and they lost by 60 points. It wasn't like just a couple of things, you know. But anyway, so Rhys goes and plays in the premiership at Sydney. Heath, lucky enough, gets it across the line in 2010 with Collingwood. Yeah, and my son was drafted. He never played a game, but he had a couple of bad injuries and they just lost time with him. But he went back and had a great junior back in the Diamond Valley, which I came from, Northern Footy League, and he was captain of a couple of premierships for Bundoora. So it's all there, and it's been fantastic just to know that, you know, we gave something to the club, but the great thing about it, they give you an opportunity. You know what it's like. I feel like I owe Collingwood.
Yeah,
like
but if you don't get that opportunity, you can't achieve your dreams.
No, exactly. And people keep saying, the club owes the players this. That's not right. They give us a vehicle, you're going to drive it.
That's right.
And just a little story. I bought my first house in 1983. Mm-hmm. It was 80 grand. I needed 10 grand to get it done. And I didn't have a contract the next year. Wow. So I went to Jack Hickey, who was the president of the club. I said, mate, can you loan me 10 grand? He said, you haven't got a contract. I said, mate, I'll pay it back even out of if I'm not playing here. I'll work and I'll pay it back and I'll sign. He said, we'll give you the 10 grand anyway. Wow. And I got my first house. Now, they didn't have to do that.
That's probably why you went on and played 300 games for that football club. That's why.
I loved them. And I loved Jack for that reason, you know. And, so it's just, just those sort of things that people don't know about behind the scenes, what clubs do for players.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to bring it up. Racism in sport sort of stuff and sledging and all that. Now, men, you can talk like this because, look, we're two old grey out of old men. we're not in our prime trying to kill each other like we're doing in the 90s, early 90s. But let's be honest, brother, you come out and you sort of said, you know, if you wanted to say something on the field to upset the opposition, you just said it.
Yeah.
And that's okay. We can talk about it now.
No, that's all
now,
right.
Now, you can't do that anymore. We can talk about it because let's be honest with me and you.
Yep.
Me and you had a few going on between me and you. That's our business, got nothing to do with no one else. Me and you are good friends today. Can you give us a comment on that?
Yeah, mate. I was so naive. At that time, you've got to remember Monkey and Longy, the thing had come.
Exactly.
And I was trying to support Monkey in a way. I couldn't remember whether I'd said something bad with a racist undertone to anybody. And I've said it now. I think I was on open mic. You know, I've said it 100 times.
Yep.
If anybody thought that I disrespected them on the footy field, I would apologise publicly.
Yeah.
And we've been in social corner. Derek Kickett. There's so many. Wally Lovett was one of my teammates.
Yes, Wally, I remember Wally.
It was wrong. It was wrong in those days, and I'm glad it's been wiped out. And if you go down that track, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
But I've never had that much hatred to think that was an issue that could keep going on. You know, it's not like apartheid when you got 200. I never knew anybody to have that hatred, you know. But anyway, there's other things that have happened.
But in fairness, like, that's how it was back then. And you could, me personally, I could understand why. But the good thing is, it doesn't and it can't anymore. And that's the good thing about it too.
I've got to say, it wasn't right. And like I said,
thank you for sharing that.
I stood up and I said, you know, my comments were naive in trying to support. And you wear it, you know, but if I can't have a beer with anybody at any time, anywhere, that's what I said.
Well, something's wrong, isn't it?
Well, that's something wrong. And if that person comes to me, I'd apologise to them right now.
You know what, brother?
No worries, mate.
And that's what I love about my show is that I've been able to open up and speak about things. And it's been good for my own mental health a little bit too.
Good on you, mate.
And I'm sure it's been good for relations and everything, but... Nah, thank you so much for sharing that with me. Now, Vic Park, because we talk about suburban grounds, because I played at Moorabbin, the animal cage. You would have got talking about a few comments and a few words there. Victoria Park, let's talk about the old days. How good was it?
It was just unbelievable. Like, you got to remember, I grew up as a young kid standing on my dad's beer cans, you know, watching the games. and you thought, geez, is it raining somewhere and all this water? And it wasn't water, you know. The boys couldn't go to the toilet. But we were crammed in.
Were they that bad at Collingwood, weren't they?
Yeah, no doubt, mate. Oh. You can't get through 30,000 people to go to the toilet. And then you lose your spot. But, you know, it was just the ground itself. It was just legendary. It was hard to get a car park for anybody of the opposition.
Oh, no. The cold showers.
You never put an opposition sticker on your car when you came to Victoria Park. Because you wouldn't have
a... I think I got a lift. I think I got a lift to the Victoria Park.
Did you?
I was frightened to bring my car there.
But, look, it was just great in front of that social club. I've seen blokes like... Yeah. Well, as a kid, I saw McKenna kick goals from there. When I played, I had Dacos kick goals from there.
What a
legend. And the crowd just... it just lifted you. You know, we probably lost a little bit of the shine, probably in my coach's career. We lost a few games there, but we didn't lose many games, mate, going right through. It was just... I played down at Moorabbin. Now, Moorabbin was the only ground in the middle of a drought that had a wet centre. They used to hose it on purpose. Burnsy, the Cunningham boys, all that. Yeah, they used to hose it so it'd slow everybody down.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, when we got there, we soon put a stop to that.
Yeah, because you were quick.
Because we were quick. And I hated the wet and rain.
Well, you and Nicky, of course, you didn't want any mud and all that.
No. Well, we ended up going to Victoria Park and you just went to the MCG.
Yeah, there you go. Geez, amazing turnaround that, isn't it?
Hey, Collingwood greats now. Nathan Buckley's recently come out and mentioned Scotty Pendlebury's one of the greatest at the football club. Oh, look at the history of the football club. You're in that category, mate. Don't sell yourself short because of what you achieved at that club. The great Peter Dacos, what a legend. The great Gordon Coventry, what a legend. Like, Nathan Buckley was an absolute legend. I sort of agree with Bucks a little bit. Is Scott Pendlebury the greatest Collingwood? It's a hard thing. You can't compare, but it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't compare, but you've got to. He's done everything. He is on a par. I always said Peter Dacos.
Yes.
But I had the honour of playing. And I think, we were talking about stats and how his boys are going. And you think about a small forward, which Peter Dacos was a great midfielder, but he did an ACL injury early in his career. So he became like a medium forward. In 1990...
Imagine if he wouldn't have done his knee.
Oh, he was freakish. As a midfielder, he was freakish before he did his knee. But in 1990, he kicked 97 goals in a premiership year. Now, everybody's saying, will Nick and Josh be as good? Great players in their own right. But a small forward now, All-Australian, you kick 45 and you make All-Australian. And then you kick 72 in 1991 when we didn't make finals.
To back it up.
Oh, mate, 160-odd goals in 2 years.
Oh, he was...
You don't see it, do you? No. Oh, but look, Pendlebury, as in what he's done now, Gil, is just, if you want to put him, I go Johnny Greening, who I luckily took his number, which I love Johnny Greening as a player. I didn't go back to McKenna and that, but...
McKenna was a great...
McKenna and all, like the Richardson boys, whatever. But Johnny Greening, I go Dacos. And then you've got to go Pendlebury and Buckley, that four, probably the best. But that's not taking into account, who played from, the 1800s to, 1960, probably,
Unbelievable.
Yeah, great players.
Last year, the 2023 Premiership, proud moment for the club.
Yeah, they did it the hard way, mate. I tell you what, if you're a Collingwood supporter and you're ageing, you worry you're going to have a massive heart attack every time you watch them play.
Well, I think he's won 5 games under 1 point.
Yeah.
Last year.
What do you do, mate? You're sitting there, you go, can't you put them away by 10 goals? I always thought, what is going on here? They get up and then I think it's the way that they play with so much flair that they can be scored against if they don't do it right, So
good point.
But I love it that they want to score. Look, it was a great feeling for the club again. It's been 13 years since our last one. But again, you've got side bottom and you've got Pendlebury who've won, played in two now. So... just a great moment for the club. Can they do it again? I don't know. I think they're a chance. They can. You just don't know what you get with them all the time, And sides, I think, are worried about,
Put it this way, if they're in the 8 and they're in the 4, look out.
And I tell you, put them in just in the game in itself, in a relationship to the game. If they're 5 goals down at 3-quarter time, which isn't a lot in these days, but if they fight... Sides are worried, and you could probably, I reckon when they've won those games, you can see the other side, they're going to come soon. And it sort of makes you sit back and not take the game on yourself. Another goal could nip it in the bud, but because they're so nervous, Collingwood get a run on and they don't know how to defend in the end. So that's something opposition sides probably have to look at, mate.
Tony, you mentioned before you started out as a tagger.
Yeah.
And you probably got taught how to get to the ball and find the ball from the bloke that you're tagging. There's no doubt about that. Who was your toughest opponents? Tell me some. Tony Plough Wallace was obviously one of them.
Plough was hard because he had probably the attributes that I had, which I thought I could get wear people down, with my stamina. He couldn't do that with Plough as much. There was Flea Waitman, the Cracker Boys. Like, I played against Phil and Jim and more Jim. Trying to stop them from a pack and. just flicked the ball over the head and there's Phil running on to a 30 metre. I'm going, how the hell did that happen, you know? There's a lot. Greg Williams, I had a lot of run-ins with Greg and not all great, but we, so we went head-to-head a hell of a lot, but super player.
He's one of the greatest I've ever seen, Greg Williams.
Yeah. Well, see, he wasn't quick. He was very similar to me. He had good motor, but left and right foot. What I had to do with Greg is cut down his angles, because the thing is, if he didn't use the ball well against Greg, he'd be on the other side of the ground because he reads the play, so a kick and a half away. So you had to make sure, as soon as out of your area, where is he? Get him, you know. And I could go with him stamina-wise, but just great plays. Gee, you forget, you know, having played for 17 years and you just forget, you know, probably had too many knocks of the head, Gil.
You were speaking about sons and my son. Oh, well, he was that close to getting drafted, and your son,
one son, Braden, he got drafted and then had an ankle injury, a shoulder injury, and the club just, I was a bit disappointed at the time because I thought they didn't give him enough time to get it, but look, all done and dusted. I'm so proud about the disappointment, and you'll understand, you know. You've been a star, and then your son's got to come through, and everybody's putting, Gil's your father, and how's that going to go,
my son, there were like 4 or 5 clubs talking to him at the time, and, you know, me being who I am, just saying to him, look, just don't take it for granted, you're just not going to get drafted, because, you know, they speak to all sorts of players, don't they?
And
the ordinary people don't understand, and if you don't get drafted, sometimes it can hurt you.
Oh, no, you can see it. And my son was a father's son, so he was the same year as Heath.
Yes.
And see, Heath's gone on and played 300 games, and Reece has done what he's done, and my son didn't play a game. So you're thinking, gee, how's this going to impact him? But, I said, I'm so proud of the positivity he's had, and he coaches kids now in basketball and football.
Good on him.
And just had a great career in the Northern Footy League. He's, I think he was voted in the Northern Footy League team of the last decade before that year. So I'm just so proud that it could have impacted him, mate. And you saw the signs, you're probably thinking, you just got to support him, don't you?
Well, that's exactly what I did with my son. And, he played Darwin in the off-season.
Yep.
Then he's playing in Melbourne, Shepparton for someone else. And they play all year round. And I'm saying to him, gee, son, you, how's your body going? You're making the most of it, because you'll be breaking down like a horse soon.
Yeah. And he still got through it and gets it up.
And they're still going. They're still playing now, all year round. I don't know how they do it. Anyway, look, me and you both been in the media since we both finished our careers. And, you know, obviously went into Margaret. We got you on Margaret quite a few times.
You
used to be a bit of a regular there sometimes. You've been in the industry for 25 years.
Yeah, near enough.
How'd you find it from playing to media? Because I enjoyed it, because you don't have to do all the training. You don't have to answer to the coach. You just be yourself.
Well, they don't. Yeah, well, that's probably the biggest thing that people... I look at a lot of blokes in the media now, and I just think... I call it they're too statified. In other words, if they didn't have champion data stats in front of them...
They'd be stuffed.
Probably the terminology. But I started... when I was coaching, we didn't make the finals my last 2 years, and AW asked me to come and do finals for them. So I did it then. And then when I finished coaching, I got on. So I was with Rex, Shane Healy, Tony Leonard... But all the players, Sam Newman was there, Ron Barassi. I had some of the greatest nights. Like, matter of fact, I had half an hour with Ron Barassi in a bar at our hotel in Brisbane, sitting in a cubicle, mate. He's having a drink and I'm having a drink, and we talk footy for half an hour. It was probably about my fourth game with AW, and it was the greatest half hour. I'm sitting with an out-and-out legend in Ron Barassi, and we're talking footy, and I thought, you couldn't get any better than this. It was like Christmas for me, you know. But that's what happened. We had great ratings over a long period of time, and we still do. And it keeps you young. You know, I work now with Matty Richardson, Jimmy Bartel, Matty Lloyd, all these great players. And we're different eras, but, we don't always agree on things, but you just it does keep me young. I love it, yeah.
Hey, one thing I wanted to ask you with Ray and Neville, did you three all play... In one game together, those 3 years?
No, I played with Ray and then I played with Neville, but I didn't play with... Yeah, it would have been... I wish it happened. Yeah, it would have been great, you know. Like the Danaher's, when the four of those blokes played, it was just brilliant watching that. And, it's amazing, you know, a lot of people say about the Indigenous boys, how they know where, like Jimmy and Phil.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I sort of felt that, you know, as a brother, you sort of know what they do.
Like, and not to the extent... Like twins.
And I just knew that, you know, I know how Ray would go about it, where he'd swing onto his body. Because a lot of players don't look to how other players play, you know. If you play on someone, you should know what he does.
If you grew up with him, you should know everything.
Exactly. And then we had a little bit of that, and it was a shame that we didn't get to play together. It would have been great, mate.
Well, you mentioned before about the other brother. He was the talentedest, but he was the laziest.
Who's that?
One of your brothers.
Oh, Neville. Well, I think Neville... Yeah. Neville was a ripper player, but he didn't train as hard as he was. I think he got caught up as a bit all the off-field sort of stuff, you know. But look, he understands that. Yeah. It's all it is now.
Well, I always say Adrian was better than me and Greg.
Yeah, but, yeah.
And like skill-wise, Adrian just had amazing skill.
Well, Greg came down to St Kilda, didn't he?
He played in 85.
That's right.
But I reckon you and Greg would have played state footy when Greg played for South Australia at Footy Park. Because I remember watching you play against him a few times back in the early 80s.
Oh, mate, I was chasing you all around. I was chasing your whole family around most of the time.
Yeah, look, Tony, when I got recruited and I came in 91, I had three kids under the age of 5 years old. Now, I'm playing AFL.
Yeah.
Me and my missus, three kids under the age of five. I've roughed up. I'm working. Not like today, professional footballers. I'm working.
And then you go to training.
And I'm coming home. She's looking after the three kids all under the age of five. I don't know how she done it. I really don't know how.
I'm with you.
And don't forget, we're Indigenous, so it's pretty hard.
Yeah.
You know, we really struggled with that, but because we had... strong people in the club to support us, we got through it.
Yeah.
Look how much times have changed. In today's footy, you get signed up, bang, you're on nearly 300,000 just straight away. You've walked straight out of school.
Straight in.
We walked straight out of school, straight to a job, straight to football.
Football,
Hasn't times changed?
Well, it's a business. It's a business. And I think that 300,000, I think it's nearly 400 now.
Is it that much
now? Yeah, I think it is. That's the average wage. So
I get so jealous.
You think when you think 400,000, I'm thinking, gee, I think my first, I think I got 50 bucks a game in my first senior game.
Back then?
Back in 78. I got 50 bucks or something. But money never was an issue to me because...
Not back then, because we didn't grow up with it, did we?
And you're living the dream anyway, mate.
Exactly.
I don't begrudge them getting the money to do. I think sometimes some blokes are just over the top because they're thrown into the marketplace and and sometimes I think clubs, they fail in not doing the homework to the point where... Oh, we're going to have to pay him another 100 grand just to get him across. But is he worth the 100? You know, it is a business. Look at the social part of it. Like, you know, after a game, we could go back to and have a beer with each other in the aftermatch.
Then
these blokes, I don't think they ever meet the opposition other than on the ground. Half of them probably wouldn't know who they're playing against, let alone.
That's true.
I used to love our day. We go in the aftermatch and the opposition would come in and you try and, you know, win on the ground and do what you have to do
Then you had a drink.
And that was the respect that you had. And it's a shame. I think our era...
That wouldn't happen today.
I think we had more fun. I think we had more fun in our time, in our era. And today, it is a business. They understand that. The one thing I hate about the game, and I think players, social media... If I was ever coaching or I'm in administration, I'd just say to my players, don't even look at it.
You know what? Thank God we didn't have mobile phones back in our day and all the stuff like, thank goodness. I would have been like, I don't know how these kids do it.
They're under a lot of scrutiny.
And social media, I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, they're under a lot of scrutiny, you know, because of that, because if someone's always got a camera, you know, a phone.
They can't even go out and enjoy themselves.
You know what I always say, mate? I always say, scrutiny shouldn't be a problem if you don't stuff up.
Well, that's exactly
if you're doing something wrong.
That's right.
That's when scrutiny's a problem.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point.
You'll take all the good times, but when you do stuff up, you know you're going to have to pay a price.
You can't have it both ways.
No, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah. Tony Shaw, thanks for kicking back with Gilden McAdam.
It's a pleasure,
mate. Thank you, brother.
It's a pleasure.